Welcome to the Underwater Technology Podcast from SUT, the Society for Underwater Technology. I'm Emily Boddy, Communications and Publications Officer at the SUT.
And I'm Andrew Connolly with the SUT Aberdeen Branch and SUT Council.
Each week we bring you interviews with our members, guests and colleagues from the global underwater technology community. Podcast 56, 6th of May 2021. In this episode, we talk with Fraser Milne of Balmoral. Fraser talks about the Balmoral product line, past, present and future, and how they are adapting to keep up with changing markets in the offshore world.
Welcome to the SUT Underwater Technology Podcast. My guest today is Fraser Milne from Balmoral. Welcome, Fraser.
Hello, Andrew. Thanks for inviting me here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. So we're going to learn a bit about Balmoral products, Balmoral services, but would you mind just telling us and the audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. I'm the Engineering and Projects Director here at Balmoral. My current role includes responsibilities for product design, project management, both product and material developments, and the day-to-day running of our subsea test centre. I've actually been at Balmoral now 28 years. Interestingly, I started on the shop floor back in 1993 and worked my way through many technical roles to my current position, joining the board in 2013.
Excellent. Well, that sounds like a great journey. 28 years, that's some length of time. And in my own day job, I've been on the go for pretty much coming up 16 years. And I keep telling myself I need to go and do something else eventually. But I mean, it sounds like a similar path to you. You've had lots of different roles through that time and it's sort of remained interesting.
Yeah, that's correct. And the beauty within Balmoral is we're a bespoke, primarily a bespoke product manufacturer. So every day is different. You know, one day you're designing a buoyancy module, next day we're designing protection covers, next day we're developing something brand new. So yeah, there's something every day to keep our interest, which has kept me busy and kept me focused.
It keeps you out of trouble, yeah. So for those in the audience who aren't aware of what Balmoral do, what sort of things do you guys get up to?
Well, Balmoral was founded in 1980 by our chairman, Dr. James Milne, no relation to myself. The business was specialising in glass fibre structures. Some listeners might remember the earlier products Balmoral produced. The notable ones are, we did the royal boxes down at the Edinburgh Tattoo, and we did the glass fibre fascias for the Bon Accord Centre in Aberdeen. We're diverse as we did the water slides down at the Aberdeen Beach. So, you know, that was the very...
Is that right?
Yeah, very early days. So we've come a long way since then. Through the 90s, we changed the business that evolved, specialising in water storage tanks, oil storage tanks, and subsea buoyancy and protection systems. Moving on more recently, we've really focused on deep water systems within my division, while the tanks division has moved off to pastures new. They're down in Wales, away from the Aberdeen facility I'm currently in, and continue to grow as well. Today, the wider Balmoral Group has a diverse portfolio of businesses. We continue to offer the water storage tanks and oil storage tanks, but we've added fire protection systems and offshore winch businesses. But as I said, the area I work for still specialises in the manufacture of advanced polymer composites for subsea environments.
I see. To be honest, I did not know about all the history of products that you guys did. I mean, that is quite a track record and quite a diverse track record as well. So, I mean, you're talking about various different markets. I mean, what would you say is the primary market for you guys?
The primary market for this division here is the oil and gas. We specialise in buoyancy systems, and that's from surface to seabed, thermal insulation systems and protection systems, you know, protection covers, shrouds. And sometimes we even have a combination of those products. One of the projects I remember quite well is the Girasol project. It was probably a world's first, where we combined buoyancy systems and insulation systems together to create a riser tower, production riser tower for Total. And it sounds simple joining the two systems together, but the nature of buoyancy hates heat. So when you put heat on buoyancy, the performance of buoyancy reduces. So when you're trying to add insulation, you want to retain the heat. So we had to come up with some unique chemistry on that project, and it went live in 2001 and been very successful. So that's primarily the area of our business today.
Okay. And do you see the market changing as sort of offshore energy developments are changing? You know, everyone's talking about energy transition. Is that something that you guys get involved in?
Absolutely. One of the key parts of our business at the moment is diversification and key objectives. And we are very focused on the renewables market and expanding our portfolio in that market. We do have products out there now, and we're working on even more products for the future. So we're doing both the fixed wind and the floating wind, but we're also looking at other products that we think will come to the forefront in the future, which is the wave and the tidal systems. Not all the power is going to come from just the wind itself. So yeah, we've got a diverse portfolio of products for these markets, either ready and being selling or currently in development.
Interesting. Yeah. What level of new product development do you need to go through to keep up with this sort of thing?
The product development is intensive. You know, we've obviously recently entered the offshore wind market, selling our cable protection systems, which is a spin-on to our oil and gas products. Developing these products has been a challenge because we want to come to the market with something new. It's very easy to come to the market just doing a repeat of what everyone else does. So we've come with a different approach that we are offering a bend stiffener type solution to protect the cable from fatigue. But one of the problems with bend stiffener solutions is they're just a standard polyurethane material. They creep, they flex a lot. So what we've done is embedded fibers within the polyurethane. So we actually have a fiber-reinforced polyurethane, which is a pretty unique product. It actually gives two materials that are always trying to oppose each other. The fiber within the material wants to stay stiff and rigid when the polyurethane wants to flex and bend. But that, again, the blend correct, and we've done this through our development, means that the product will bend and flex just enough, but not too much, and it gives you the real benefit of reduced weight, but added strength and added tensile properties of the system. Now, to allow us to do that in the development, we've had to invest millions of pounds. You know, it is an expensive business to get into. Part of that investment was on the back of our subsea test centre. You know, we built a £20 million subsea test centre in the last few years, and it's been very successful for us. But we had to add to that. We had to add a 22-metre high renewables test tower that we could design these products, manufacture them, and stick them on this test tower and prove that they function, and they're going to function correctly for the 25 years they're going to go into service. So going back onto the product a bit, about why we've gone this route with the unique product with the fibre and the polyurethane. And it's all to do with reducing the fatigue in the cable. And with our system having the lighter weight and having a higher tensile strength, it allows us to do some unique things. You know, anyone that's involved in the wind energy market will probably be thinking, you know, never heard of a tensile problem in cable protection for offshore wind. And we weren't actually trying to address the problem. What we were trying to do was put in a unique feature. And that feature was the ability to attach ballast to our cable protection. So that tensile strength allows us to put the ballast on without causing the whole cable protection system to creep. So it'll just stay in place. And it adds a huge amount of stability and dampening to the line, reducing the fatigue. Where that's good and where it's a benefit for the market is that you can do this an alternative way. And it's done by rock dumping. But we don't believe that that's the best solution for the market because, you know, you go out, you install your cable protection, your boat goes away, another boat comes in, does the rock dumping. You know, it's far quicker doing it in one install, far cheaper to do it in one install, and it's better for the environment because you don't need a second boat to come in and burn diesel to put the rocks down. So we think we've got quite a unique solution and a good solution.
Yeah, generally out of any offshore operation, the boat is one of the most expensive bits to go and do that. So, you know, if you can save an extra operation there, then, you know, it's going to be a big saving. But it sounds like a very sort of complex mix of requirements that you guys end up having to comply with or meet. I mean, how do you even go about starting a development like that? Is it a ground-up design?
In this instance, we had a business plan to diversify into the offshore wind, and we looked around the market to see who was the players in the market. There was a player that was failing in the market that we felt was failing, and we decided to acquire that business. So we acquired that business, but the business was failing. But they had the principles of the technology they had were very good. They just couldn't get that principles to work. So we took what was good of their ideas and just built on it till we had a system, you know, that we managed to get the material properties correct, that the system functioned correctly and repeatable. And that was the real strength. And that's where we brought it into the Balmoral portfolio and now selling it under the Balmoral name.
What sort of challenges do you see through a development like that? I mean, I guess it's quite a complex development cycle. There's some pretty significant challenges you guys have to overcome.
Yeah, there are. And the difference between oil and gas and the offshore renewables is that oil and gas is a very mature market. So you have standards, you have procedures, you have specifications from the customers. Offshore renewables is far more in its infancy. So there aren't the standards there that you're designing to. And you've got to come up with your own standards. Unlike oil and gas, a supplier like Balmoral has to do a lot of the system development and design rather than just build a product to a specification. So that brings unique challenges that the engineers within my team are looking at these things and don't have a clear specification to design the product and actually have to go out and research it, learn about the field, learn about metrology and all that to actually design the product, which previously they'd pick up the spec and they'd make a product that works to that spec. So there's a lot of challenges within the design side, just learning the requirements. And that was probably one of the biggest learnings from Balmoral is that, yeah, we're going to have to be a bit more involved. We're going to have to take a bit more ownership ourselves and come up with these unique solutions ourselves. And that's what we've done. And we've been very successful so far.
Yeah, I mean, you're speaking there about regulation standards and not being so clear cut, you know, in a relatively new industry with offshore renewables. Is that something that you guys can perhaps help drive? You know, looking at the regulation there, you know, can you input to what would be involved there?
I believe so down the line that, yes, that will be the case. You know, as a company, we've been heavily involved supporting the American Petroleum Institute standards, the APIs. There's one particular API, 17L, that relates to basically all the products we do for oil and gas. You have to comply with that standard. You don't have the same in renewables, but it is coming, you know, especially as there is a lot of oil companies diversifying into renewables. They're taking with them that experience, that need for the standards so you can get repeatability. So, yeah, we hope to be part of that journey and we will offer help to build those standards as we go, like we have done in oil and gas.
You were mentioning earlier on about significant investment in equipment and facilities. Has this involved a bit of an investment in skills as well over the recent years?
Yes, skills is something we've had to invest in, and we've had to invest in it internally. Unlike most industries, the skills are very unique and the competition base is quite small. So you can't pick up an engineer that's got experience of renewables fields off the shelf. We basically have to train them. So we at Balmoral have invested heavily in our graduate training program, where we bring in fresh graduates and put them through a three-year program of learning on the job, followed by a senior engineer, to develop their skill set with them ultimately being able to take the lead on one of these projects. So it's a significant investment in the company, but an investment in people, which is something that's close to my heart, especially because I joined Balmoral as a graduate and I got the training at Balmoral and I am where I am because of that development. And I want to personally, and I know the chairman and that supports it, give back to the graduates and build them up from the bottom. And it's something within our psychology that we like to do. Is trained from the bottom up. And we do a lot more recruitment of graduates than we do more senior positions.
A great message as well that you could join as a graduate in a company and put that effort in and put that commitment in and, you know, progress to a level of fairly significant responsibility.
Exactly. I swear by it. I'm an example of it. You don't need to jump ship every couple of years to find something new to work your way up the tree. If you put in the effort, you will work your way up within good businesses. I'm in my position like that. My project manager below me was one of my graduates previously, and the senior project engineers below him were graduates before him. So so right the way through our tree, our structure tree, people have got there from the ground up, and it's something we firmly believe in.
What's next on the roadmap for Balmoral?
The next on the roadmap for Balmoral is obviously continuation into the renewables. As I say, we're pursuing the offshore wave, offshore tidal, looking to see where they're going, keeping a close eye. We were part of the Wave Energy Scotland development programme, which was very interesting. But we do think those technologies will come. And then our plans are to focus on the next diversification is probably the lightweighting. We'll be focusing on lightweighting. And when I say lightweighting is we want to take, as it says, weight out of products, but basically offering our advanced polymers, our fibre-reinforced polymers instead of steel structures and various other areas, adding to our portfolio of protection covers. We believe people are only touching the surface of what they can do with the advanced composite materials, and we want to push further into that, especially with the lessons we're learning through our buoyancy systems and through our renewable products.
Hopefully there's some good progress that can be made into some of these alternative markets.
Oh, absolutely. You know, if we go back to Balmoral's history, we had a huge history of composite products from, as I said before, the royal boxes at the Tattoo, but we also made lifeboats. We actually at one stage made turbine blades. We used to make the nacelle housings for all the windmills in Scotland that were being made by Vestas. Unfortunately, a lot of that business in Scotland moved back to Europe, but we do see there's a growth opportunity there for the subsea composites. Again, with things such as hydrogen capture, with more protection covers, there's definitely potential to bring a lot of that business back to Scotland.
What sort of things do you do to keep an eye on these changing markets?
We keep an eye on the publications, such as all the SUT publications, but we also go to trade shows a lot. We talk to our customers a lot. We obviously can't do a lot of that at the moment, stuck in our houses. But hopefully that'll be coming back. You know, indications are that a lot of the trade shows will start again later this year. It's very difficult to come up with a solution for a problem if you don't know the problem. And the only way to find the problem is get out and about and talk to people. And that's what we're seeing. Yeah. Understand what people want and understand where the problems are. Then come back to the team and say, this is a problem we've heard about. What can we do to resolve that person's problem? And if you find a solution to that problem, you'll probably find that a whole load of other people have got the same problem and you've got a product range you can sell.
Yeah, for sure. And hopefully we don't have to wait too long before being able to meet people face to face. And so doing some of these things that we're all look forward to and having conversations and sort of looking for these new opportunities.
I think that what we've found is it's very easy to communicate with existing contacts and such like the way we're working at present, but actually networking and developing new contacts is far more challenging. And that's where you get the new business from.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that. So Balmoral, they've been very good continuing members of SUT. What does it mean to an organisation like Balmoral to be SUT members?
We find being SUT members very beneficial. You know, you're part of a industry-leading global organisation and you've got a critical mass of people on there that you can communicate with. You get your publications. Provides us valuable networking and presentation opportunities and thought-provoking discussions, which, again, is the lifeblood of the business. You know, that these thought-provoking discussions that can be led through a body like SUT allows us to develop these new products and allows us to move into these new markets.
Thanks very much for the feedback on that. If there's anything that the SUT membership would potentially provide benefit to Balmoral or would like to get in touch and find out more, how would they go about doing that?
All of our details are available on our website, balmoraloffshore.com. There's a contact us page there and you can get in touch with every one of us. And if you want to speak to some of the technical guys, there's a technical support email address there. Speak to us and you actually will get the whole technical team on that email address. So it can be a very, very valuable resource.
Okay. It's been thoroughly interesting, Fraser. I really did, when I say on most of these things that I learn a lot, but I actually learned some real things that I didn't know about Balmoral before. It's been very educational for me. Leaves us to cover our recurring feature of subsea facts.
I had a lot of thinking about this and coming up with subsea fact relative to Balmoral. So in my time here, since in the last 28 years, Balmoral produced a lot of buoyancy systems. You know, and deep water buoyancy systems. And I'm talking buoyancy that's sitting at 2,000 meters seawater. But if you take all our installed buoyancy systems that are sitting at 2,000 meters or around that area, and I'm not talking stuff from the drilling side that's up and down, stuff that's down there for 25 years, everything we supplied, you could float 6 Eiffel Towers. So that's the amount of buoyancy we've got down there.
What's the tonnage buoyancy uplift on that then?
The weight of an Eiffel Tower is 10,000 tons. So we've got about 60,000 tons of buoyancy subsea.
That's an impressive statistic and impressive that you can go and find that out from your sort of historical product supply as well. So I'm very impressed in that. Thanks very much.
No problem.
So just leaves me to say thank you very much for a great conversation. Been a pleasure speaking with you and learning more about yourself and more about what Balmoral do. So thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me as a guest.
And thanks very much to the audience for tuning in. Do tune in again to further podcast episodes and we'll look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. To find out more about SUT, go to sut.org. If you'd like to get in touch with us about appearing on a future episode, or to find out how you can sponsor an upcoming episode, contact info@sut.org. You can also follow SUT on social media. We're on Twitter @SUT_news, Instagram @Society for Underwater, Facebook @Society for Underwater Technology, and LinkedIn @SUT-Society for Underwater Technology. This season we'll see the return of our Q&A episode, where we ask your questions about the underwater world to subsea experts. Send in your questions now to info@SUT.org for a chance to have them answered later this season. Please don't forget to like, rate and subscribe to the podcast, and we'll be back with a new episode next week.